to go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35,
30. Oh, getting up front. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you. Our number is 201-939-4513. As you know, we're here every Monday to Friday. Well, maybe not us, Roman, but at least some of our broadcast team to take your phone calls every noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time as we discuss what's going on with the New York Football Giants. Now, in a couple of days, they'll be heading down to Nashville, Tennessee to take on the Tennessee Titans, a team that has lost six in a row. Giants, obviously, in a losing streak of their own. So both of these teams are hungry for a win. Both of these teams trying to prove something, Roman. In fact, one of the themes that I know Tom Coughlin's been talking about is always young players getting opportunities. Well, whether it be out of lineup shuffling or injuries, the Giants have some young players like Devon Kennard, Kerry Wynn. They got both got their first NFL sacks last weekend in Jacksonville.
Right.
And then also, obviously, DeMontre Moore is certainly in line to get increased reps now that Mathias Kiwanuka is on injured reserve with a bum knee. So this is really time to step up for those guys.
Yeah, Paul, and for those of you know who everyone doesn't know this, but I started, I think 5.5 straight seasons or something like that until I got injured and missed a game, and then I came back a couple of weeks later. In that span of time, like a guy, like Toby Miles is one of them, I saw guys get drafted and have their careers ended because they just never got on the field. And so durability as a veteran is key, but also sometimes these young players never get a chance to really show what they're worth early until year two, three, sometimes four, just because of the lineup or they haven't really done anything to jump themselves ahead. But these guys, as you mentioned, Paul, they have a wonderful opportunity. Kerry Wynn, Kennard, two sacks last week.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy that I think could be that next great Giants linebacker in terms of his productivity out of college, just how physical of a tackler, his natural leader in college. And obviously, you talk about DeMontre Moore, you know, really being a second-year guy. And a lot of coaches always feel like second-year players really make the biggest jump in terms of your career because by your third year, you know, you are who you are.
Right.
By your third year. And again, that's not set in stone, but circumstantially that has an issue. But, Paul, I'm very excited about these young guys that are going to have a chance to perform. I mean, let's look at the reality. You know, Ayers was probably a 2-3 year guy or whatever. I mean, wherever he is at this part of his career. Mathias Kiwanuka was in his ninth year. You talk about some of the other positions, you know, at linebacker. Beason, you know,
he's older.
Yeah, he's older. I don't know his future. I don't know his salary cap or whatever, how cap-friendly his contract.
Oh, he is coming off of foot surgery, so
yeah,
you just don't know.
I mean, so Devon Kennard, you know, you talk about the two D linemen and whoever else in that category. I mean, these guys have a chance to really prove themselves and say, can they be a part of the Giants' immediate future as the team plans forward? You don't want to be evaluating a rookie only looking at his preseason film and the two or three times he's on special teams throughout the season. I mean, now these guys have legitimate reps to prove themselves going forward.
In real games, not just preseason
games. Yeah, 100%.
You know? I want to get back to that right after we get through the injury report because I do think the theme of today's show should be about some of the lineup changes and some of the younger guys as we move forward. I want to know what you've seen with them, what we can expect from them, how they may be utilized. And I'd like to hear what the fans have to say about them as well. You can also, besides calling us at 201-939-4513, hit us up at hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. The injury report, and this kind of plays into what we're talking about with the lineup, Roman, guys who did not participate yesterday, James Brewer with a concussion, Mark Herzlich with a concussion, Rashad Jennings with an ankle. Now, I will tell you, out of those three guys, Rashad Jennings, who said he probably would not work today, is still hopeful that he's going to be able to play in the game. Remember, the other day against Jacksonville, he came out with a sprained right ankle. They taped him up on the bench, and he insisted on getting back in there.
Right.
I mean, this guy does
yeah,
not
I mean, look
like
at how much
time
he's missed to this point.
He would have missed 5 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, he'd like to, I'm sure, I don't know what his rushing numbers are at this point, but
He wants to
I'm
play.
Sure he'd like to get to that north of 600-700 yards rushing number or more than that, and with a good average, more importantly than anything.
So anyway, those are the guys who did not participate yesterday, guys who were limited. Colin Jenkins, although he was moving around well during the media portion that we saw, Jameel McClain has that knee thing going on. He looked a little stiff during media portions yesterday. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, his shoulder now is a bit of an issue, but again, he was limited. Jaquan Williams, coming back off of a concussion and his shoulder, was also limited yesterday. He was moving around pretty well, though.
And before you announce the next guy, let me give you a drum roll.
Justin Pugh, full practice yesterday.
Yes.
Coming off of a quad, which forced him to miss two-plus games, and he was going at it pretty good. From what I could see, he was going at it pretty good. And so we anticipate that, based on what he said and what Coach said, that he'll be starting against Tennessee.
I mean, I haven't been more excited to see Justin Pugh playing a football game in 2 years. I mean, it instantly restabilizes. I talked about this yesterday on the press conference. Right? It instantly restabilizes that offensive line. If you put Pugh back at right tackle, Jerry goes back inside, center left guard, left tackle, you know, really remain unchanged. And you're playing a Tennessee Titans defensive line who's bottom of the league in sacks. And I think that just, you know, it is what it is.
Actually, they got 31. The line may be among the lowest lines in the league, but as a team, they have 31 sacks, which is ninth in the NFL.
Right. So
it's not a bad overall number.
They'll create sacks from different places, but I think in terms of the defensive line itself, the 5-0 line versus the 4-D line and a linebacker, I like my chances. And you need some kind of confidence on the road when you're playing a team, when you're coming back from an injury and it's a road game.
I'm looking at how many different guys on this team have sacks for the Titans, and this goes to your point about how they do it in different ways. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 different guys on this team have sacks.
And the fact that I look at the first two numbers. I always look at the first two or three numbers. Casey and Morgan, Dan Morgan, linebacker, 5 and 3.5.
Yeah.
You know, Griffin with 3. So
it doesn't exactly stand
out,
actually.
I mean, there's nobody scratching that 10 number, or nobody with 8, 9. You know, obviously there's still 4 weeks left to go, but it shows me that, one, a lot of teams have been running the ball on them in the second half because they've got a lead.
Yep.
And secondly, there's not a dynamic guy, if you will, on that defense line, linebacker group.
No doubt.
A guy that you have to circle on a scouting report. I hate to use that term, but this is the NFL. Just like Devin Kennard came out of nowhere and had 2 sacks last week, you want to make sure, if I'm an offensive lineman, I don't want to I don't want to see a guy go from 3 to 6 sacks total from a 3-sack performance on Sunday on the opposing team.
You know what's interesting, Roman? Now, they'll play a 3-4 in Tennessee.
Right.
Okay. Casey, who is basically a defensive tackle, kind of the way they scheme it up, and he's their leading sack guy. It's not somebody coming off of the edge.
Right.
Interesting thing about Morgan, though. When I went and dug up a lot of the different numbers, teams are only averaging 2.5 yards a carry when running at Derek Morgan, which is the lowest yards per carry average in the league. So he's a guy you probably would want to stay away from if you're going to run the ball, because let's face it, the Titans are giving up over 140 yards a game on the ground, which is last in the NFL. That says to me offenses are either running up the middle or they're running to the left. Because they don't want to see Mr. Morgan on the other side.
Yeah, and I think
one
guy in terms of he was a former teammate of mine, Sean Phillips, who was a pass rusher number 58.
They just cut him.
They did just cut him
this last week.
Yeah, so yeah. He was a guy that would have been a surprise. To cut a guy that they brought from Denver and San Diego to really bolster their sacks, they cut him in the middle of the season. I mean, that shows that they're really disappointed overall. In their ability to get to the quarterback.
I don't know if there was anything involved in there in terms of a potential injury or something of that nature.
I think he plays for the Colts now. I think Colts picked him up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you can waive a guy injured. You can reach an injury settlement. Colts claimed Sean Phillips off waivers from the Titans back on November 26th.
Yeah, it was after Thanksgiving. So.
In any event, that's the deal with what we're looking at from the Titans and what we're looking at in terms of Giants practicing and guys who are injured. We'll try to get more information for you. Obviously, the team is out there practicing now while we're in the studio. Again, 201-939-4513 is our phone number. Alex from New Jersey, you're first on the program. Hello.
Hey, guys. First-time caller.
Thank you, Alex.
I've been listening over and over again, just waiting to call one day. So
glad it finally arrived.
Yeah. So I got to talk. My simple question is, knowing that Ruben Randall is a monster in between the numbers and very ineffective outside the numbers, how come they haven't tried to put him in the slot, kind of use him like an Anquan Boldin, a bigger type slot receiver?
I think by design, Alex, if you look at this West Coast offense, and I don't know how much West Coast offense you've studied. I'm a quasi-expert, I think. It's about the concept and the route and not about putting one guy in a position to run a route or some type of combination route or something because that's what he does well. So you'll see multiple guys catch those kind of passes. You've seen Cruz do it. You've seen Jernigan do it. Thank you. You've seen Odell Beckham do it. You've seen Randall do it. And sometimes because of what a defense is showing you, that route becomes open, and the reason you don't he's good at slants. He catches those. He's a body catcher. He's a bigger receiver. Imani Toomer and I always talk about that. It's like, oh, why don't we just do that all the time? Because offensively, then you become predictable.
Yeah.
And I think that's the design of this offense to just kind of avoid that predictability, if you will, in terms of having certain guys that play certain positions. So because if you look at it that way from a football standpoint. Then you'd say, okay, Odell Beckham's the fast guy. He's always taking the takeoffs. Cruz would be the number two guy. He does the comebacks, the back shoulders. And then you go Randall, whoever the guy's in the middle doing the slants. I mean, that makes you so predictable that you don't even deserve to be an NFL football coach.
Well, then you got guys jumping routes on defense.
Yeah, exactly. And then, again, football, you know, in terms of, you know, and it was hard enough for me being an offensive tackle in the National Football League, but that whole game that's played on the perimeter, it becomes such a chess match, Paul, that you just try to play the percentages thinking what a defense will do. Defense obviously rolls coverages. You get these funky defenses like Rex Ryan, Dick LeBeau, where everything's a disguise. But you can always dictate that with a solid running game, and then you can at least throw the ball and the routes and do things that you want to do based on your ability to run the ball and draw those safeties somewhat closer to the line of scrimmage.
Now, Roman, I understand the diversity and the ways that you want to use all your different guys in as many different schemes as possible. But I think for the most part, and I'd have to literally go through everybody's roster in the league, more of your slot receivers are of the 5'11 variety than they are of the 6'2", 6'3", variety.
Right.
And I suppose that has to do, well, we know it has to do with route running for sure.
Yeah, they're shorter, shiftier, they can run better
and,
routes.
Yeah, I'm guessing. I hate to, again, generalize anybody with a paintbrush, but the smaller guys are usually more elusive in that regard.
Yeah, of course.
Because they have shorter strides.
Yeah, Victor Cruz being one of them. And exactly, and the reason that makes, and I know this is an Odell Beckham discussion, but the reason that Odell Beckham is so dynamic is because he's a 5'11", 6-foot guy, but he plays big.
He plays like he's 6'2".
So he can go get the big balls. You saw the great catch he made a few weeks ago. You could throw him a fade in the corner of the end zone. He'll jump up and grab it and yank it out there. He can also run the inside stuff, too. And that's the versatility, if you will, is what makes him unique. Now, you've seen guys like Larry Fitzgerald. We talk about Anquan Boldin, the caller, Alex. You know, these guys start playing inside when they're older, because they can't stretch the field anymore. They won't demand the respect over the top. So now they start finding creative ways to make them effective inside, between the safeties, on top of the linebackers. Because, let's say, 49ers, they've got Crabtree. They got the other guys that can really still run up and down the field without taking them off for a play, too.
Right.
So a lot of it becomes circumstances. And obviously, it always goes back to, you know, what they think a guy does well. And then with the common denominator being, what's the game plan for this week, and what can we exploit? So you saw the one game, Ruben Randall, I think 2 weeks ago, 9 for 122. Oh, why? And then
against
it goes
the Niners.
Niners. Oh, why don't we do that every week? Well, that's why you don't do that every week, because that was the time that you were hot.
Russell from Fort Knox, you're next on the program. Hello. Or is it Russell? Is it Russell? How are you? Are you really calling us from Fort Knox?
I'm gonna quote what you said. You said, I do not like a tight end that doesn't block. I don't want the Sports Center highlights. I want a tight end that blocks. And I remember when you said that, and I kept in mind, like, he said that, and now look at offensive line. They ain't blocking. Disaster. You said that in the draft. You was talking about that. I remember when you said that.
Well, I appreciate your memory, but you know what? I have to tell you. If you also remember, the guy that I was really very high on coming out the tight end was Troy Nicholas from Notre Dame.
You said that too. You want the tight end from Notre Dame, and I was like, nah, we need to get Ebron. But you were right.
Nicholas got hurt. And in fact, let me just check this a second. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he might have even been put on injured reserve, which just goes to show you, I guess, how much do I know about personnel? Because I thought Nicholas out of Notre Dame would be a really, really good physical blocking / receiving tight end. Let's take a look at this. As a matter of fact, Troy Nicholas needs ankle surgery, suffered a ankle high ankle sprain, was sent to IR. Yeah. That's it. As a rookie, caught 3 passes on 4 targets. He was hurt for most of the season, and now, indeed, he's on injury reserve and needs surgery. So it just goes to show you, picking players is not an exact science, Roman. No,
I liked him, too.
But thank you for remembering.
Yeah, I liked him, too, before you get to your question. My concern with him was just his size. He was so big that he almost becomes only a blocker, only a safety valve.
6'6", 270 is like Howard Cross size.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I know everyone wants a Jimmy Graham or Antonio Gates, that former basketball player that can – you can basically line up a receiver and catch those kind of routes. But it goes back to what that offense really requires that tight end to do. So I'm sorry. So, Russell, go with your question.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Here's the question. I'm going to say this again. I said this last time in Roman. I'm going to say it one more time. Do you think the Giants right now, are they playing for Tom Coughlin's job? Or do you think they should just say, play good enough, we ain't going to playoffs, play for the draft pick? That's the question I want to know. Because right now, I mean, if they play with their heart out, they're playing for Tom Coughlin's job. I'm not saying Tom Coughlin's going to get fired, but it ain't looking too good right now. The media, I'm looking at the rumors. They're like, get rid of him. Tiki Barber. I mean, everybody's talking about get rid of him. Even Tony Dungy. Everybody's talking about. So now this upcoming game, they lost to Jacksonville. That was a total embarrassment. Are they going to play for Tom Coughlin's job? Or are they going to just say, you know what, just see who's best young players out there. The season's over with. Play for draft pick.
Russell, thanks for the call. We'll let Roman take care of this while you listen to your computer. Go ahead.
Yeah, and let me just give you the unabridged version of this response. Number one, everyone gets evaluated from Carol, who answers the phone at the front desk, to the general manager and everyone in between. And you're always playing for your job every day you wake up and walk into this building. So, I mean, you're playing for your job if you're a backup on a 14-2 football team who's kind of you're playing for your job if you're a starter. You're playing for the job of your bad team, and you're always coaching for your job as well. And you mentioned Tony Dungy, which is ironic. You know, Tony Dungy was a guy and he said this countless times, you only have a voice for about a decade, and then you just have to move on or do something else or go to another team.
Right.
And Dungy always believed that, and, you know, ironically, he came in Tampa, I think, in 96, and they got rid of him in 01. And I came in Tampa with Gruden's staff, who kind of revamped things offensively and kept the defense intact. But again, there's different philosophies. And again, Russell, the criticism comes with the job. If I give up 2 sacks and a few false starts and we lose, look, I was a left tackle on a Browns team. I gave up a safety. I got a holding call in the end zone and got a safety, and we lost the game. I mean, that's the lowest of the low. I mean, and any criticism that was of me as a left tackle or any position, you expect that. That comes with the job. But you can't have this approach like, okay, let's just play for the draft picks and let's – look, I've been a part of this team, 2 high draft picks. My rookie year coming in off a 5-11 team, draft Cedric Jones. The very next year, I think we went 6-10, drafted Ike Hilliard. Were those guys stellar players? I mean, did they have solid careers? Whatever that, we're not debating that. But as a team, unless you have the first pick overall or the second pick, you don't really have a lot of leverage in the draft. I mean, and then you don't – if you're a team that has an answer at the quarterback position, you haven't answered some key spots, you don't want that high pick because you don't want to overdraft. You don't want to draft a player high because you have to, and a guy that may not fit. I mean, the Giants should always really draft at the bottom, middle, bottom of the first round every year. I mean, the Steelers, I mean, teams like those that always win, always in the play, always in the hunt, always winning at least 8, 9, 10 games a year. Unfortunately, this is a year where they're not going to win, 8, 9, 10, 11 games, obviously. They'll win 7 at the most. Last year, Odell was the 12th pick?
Yes.
12th. I think right now, as it stands, the Giants have the 7th pick.
I think
so. If I'm not mistaken, and that can move up or down depending on how they fare out. But I'm a firm believer in if you're a solid team and a solid organization, you don't want to have that high, that top 5 pick, because there's a 75% chance that he better be a Pro Bowler and a borderline Hall of Famer, or there's a 75% chance that he's not in those top 5. And
well, just think about this, Roman, because the way the salary structure is in the NFL, and certainly those, quote, lottery picks, for lack of a better term, the top guys, they'll be much more heavily weighted financially. So when you're dealing with your salary cap, if you make a mistake there, it's really painful.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what you're talking about. It's not just a matter of making a mistake on the player, but then there are ramifications to making a mistake.
Yeah.
In any event,
let's just for an example, I don't want to pick on the Raiders but let's look at some of these teams that are always having a top 3 pick for years. I mean, for a decade. And it doesn't.
Those organizations should be great for a decade after getting all those guys.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it doesn't always work. So this playing for the draft picks motif, it doesn't always work.
No, not a good idea. I don't think. And by the way, just to be practical, you know, if you're playing on this year's team and you're thinking about next year's draft pick, you might not be on next year's team.
Right.
I mean, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know that.
Yeah.
So, in any event, let's go back to the phones, 201-939-4513. James from Dubai? Is this true? Abu Dhabi. And where is that, John?
Yes.
Hello. Hey, yes, James. Yes. How are you?
How you doing? How you?
Great,
how you
great to have
doing?
You on the show.
Excellent. You in the military?
No, sir. No, sir.
Oh, okay.
I have a business out here, and I'm going to send you a thing on LinkedIn because I've been watching you.
Okay.
Go ahead,
but,
sir.
Real quick, I've been watching my team over here at 10 o'clock at night for the 1 o'clock game or 1 o'clock in the morning. And I've been watching you guys and listening to the media. And I really don't think, based on the injuries that Tom Coughlin and even the defensive coordinator should lose their jobs. I don't, for everyone who's saying they should lose their jobs, if you put another head coach in their position or another defensive coordinator, I know everybody's been talking about Spags. You put Spags in that same position right now, we'll be saying get rid of him too. So I think a lot of this have to do with if these guys, like you said yesterday, if they had half of their starters, their records would be a lot better than what it is. And I don't believe the coach, Tom Coughlin, have lost the locker room. I don't believe the defensive coordinator have lost the defensive players based off listening to, you know, the defensive players speak. I just think that right now the players that they've been going against have better players on than the Giants do right now. Even with JPP, he's a good player, but I think everyone saw him doing all of these sacks, and now he's a better run stopper, and, you know, he's not like the guy from Houston, Watt, or, you know, and those guys like that.
How many people are right now? That's why Watt might be in the MVP of the league, quite frankly. He's got a chance to be on a losing team. He's got a chance to be. Although I still think DeMarco Murray would be my vote, but anyway. Hey, look, did you have a question, though? Because we got to get to more callers. We have people on hold. If you had a quick question, we'd be glad to try to answer it.
That's good. That's all I wanted to say, and I'll just listen to you guys offline. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for calling. 201-939-4513. James, you're next on the program. Hello. Oh, is it Jeff?
Jeff
is next. Okay, Jeff.
It's Jeff.
Hi.
How you doing today?
Okay.
Roman, I was listening yesterday. I couldn't get through, but towards the end of the program, it seemed as if you and Anita were talking about the injuries the Giants have, of course. But it seemed as if you were trying to say that perhaps that was due to the Giants not having enough practice time or enough time on the field and so on and so forth. So that got me to thinking about the old days, and Paul remember this when back in the '60s and
Timeout. The man says old days in the 60s, and he comes to me.
I know. Well, yeah, my old days would be the 90s.
Roman wasn't around.
My old days would be the 90s.
Jeff, you know, I'm with you. I get it. It's okay. It's okay. I'm with you.
But,
go ahead.
But what I'm trying to say is, you know, at that time in those years, the guys showed up at training camp in order to get in shape. They didn't report to training camp in shape.
That's correct.
You know, in those days. So how would that go with, you know, your point with, you know, the guys not getting enough time or today, you know, and back then they weren't even anywhere near in shape. I mean, they played six preseason games in those days. But,
they sure did.
You know, they reported a camp very much out of shape. So using extending your logic a little bit, that would imply that, you know, back in those days, nobody would have played because they all would have been on the ground hurt.
Jeff, let me address this for one quick second,
yeah,
because
no.
I can go back to what he's talking about with the 70s, because I remember them, 60s and 70s, both very well, to some people's opinion. You're right about the six preseason games, for sure. I remember them very, very well. Here's the thing. From my perspective, what I have noticed is that in today's NFL, and then I want Roman to chime in on this and elaborate, nowadays I think football players get about 1 month off, and that's about it, because of the off-season program.
Well, they get more than that now.
Is it a little more than that?
It used to be like third week of March. Now it's like April 20th when they start to report.
The point is, though, that what they used to do is concentrate on training camp was really what got the guys in shape, like you said. They hit hard. They toughened up their bodies. It was kind of like the leather baseball glove you had when you were a 10-year-old, and you had to kind of toughen up that mitt before opening day.
Yeah.
So during the spring training or practice, you really worked that thing in. Well, that's the way football players were in the 60s and the 70s. You got to training camp. You toughened it up. You worked it in during training camp. And then you went out and you played. And you had some scales and grizzle on you, you know, when you got going into those games because of how tough training camp was. All those two-a-days that they just don't do anymore. So what happened is, as things started to evolve and started to change, you had the players' union that really liked to preserve the careers of the older players. And in order to cut down on their injuries and to increase their lifespans and therefore increase their salaries and everything else, they started to pull back a little bit and say, well, we need things to be a lot lighter in training camp and during the season. So the trade-off was, as the teams were asking the players to do more and more physically year-round, the players and the players' union would say, we want you guys now to pull back on training camp and pull back during the season because this is going to wind up being too much. Well, in my opinion, Jeff, in my opinion, they needed to find a happy medium somewhere in the middle, because what they have done now with the very elongated workout schedule and off-season program that I've seen develop, they have softened these guys up to such a degree that because of the flag football training camps and because of the very weak practices that they have during the season, you got more and more guys getting hurt because they're not grizzled and tough, and they're not like alligator skin players anymore.
Right.
They're too, too soft. So that's my take on how I've seen it develop over the course of years. And again, I followed this game and studied this game into the 60s. You're right. Started covering in 83. Roman's from a younger generation of player. But the fact remains, Roman, that those six preseason games of summer with all the two-a-days that those guys went through really did toughen them up. Because if you weren't tough coming out of those summer months, you had no chance during the regular season. It just was not going to happen.
Yeah, and I remember personal discussions with Gene Upshaw saying, you know, where the union was back then, I mean, all they wanted was a clean pair of socks and a jock strap. I mean, that's the first thing they bargained for. Guys would sell insurance in the off season,
sure,
and stay in their town, and then you knew that, you know, right around 4th of July, that's when training camp started, and that'll get you through the season. Obviously, you know, the NFL has done a tremendous job in incorporating. I mean, I've done a few, like it was like a broadcast boot camp for players that want to become broadcasters or these business entrepreneurial programs. They want to show that they care about more the life of the player versus just the football part. And it's been this deviation from you're not just a piece of meat and you're – I mean, imagine the team that wins a Super Bowl. I won a Super Bowl in Tampa. You know, first weekend in February, the parade is next weekend. Next thing you know, the offseason starts 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get off the tour, high school, being honored and all that, now you're starting on off season again. So they wanted to give guys a little more time. And you've got guys now that can go back to their college, finish a degree. School's out by the end of April, and that's when off season starts. You've got guys that can take more advantage of things that the league has to offer. But back in those days, health wasn't an issue. Health wasn't a priority. I mean, guys smoked cigarettes at halftime back then.
Oh, boy.
So you needed training camp to get in shape because guys weren't lifting weights and training and doing all this stuff. Now everyone has a trainer. Everyone works out. Training has become almost more important than actually the sport itself. I knew guys my last few years in San Diego that would do some of these Navy SEAL workouts, these Brazilian jiu-jitsu, all this stuff. And to me, honestly, it had nothing to do with football. So I still believe that if you're not putting your body through the rigors, and this is the whole league, not just the Giants. I mean, everyone has injuries. If you're not putting your body through the rigors that it'll have to go through the course of a season, you haven't calloused your body. And,
right.
But some teams have figured it out. I think Seattle's figured it out. Ravens, at some, you know, because they're still physical. I still see physical football and guys hitting guys. You still see that style of play. It's just whether they're hitting bags and using heavier dummies. I don't know what they're doing, but they're the coaches that can work around the system because the system affects everybody.
Sure
so
it does.
It's unfortunate.
It's a CBA.
Yeah, and Tom Cobb said it yesterday. There's a difference between soft tissue issues, injuries, than surgically needed to repair injuries, which,
yeah.
I mean, you got guys that are getting scoped and having surgeries. So those are things you just can't predict.
Yeah, I would say this. You know, certainly the athletes in today's NFL are finely tuned machines, and I get all of that. But, again, in years past,
yeah, tougher football players.
It wasn't about becoming that finely tuned Olympic-style athlete. It was about being a guy who was getting into it and hitting people and mashing people and playing the game. Guys who were tuning themselves to be football players. Today, I think more guys are training themselves to be decathletes.
Just to be athletes, know? Yeah.
And that's kind of the difference. Anyway, listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Paul Dottino and Roman Open with you. You can get us up at hashtag Giants Chat or on your telephone at 201-939-4513. Before I go back to the calls, we got a couple of people on hold. I do want to go to Giants Chat because I know a bunch of folks like to get in on the internet instead of going through the telephone. And so we'll see if we have anybody here. We have a fellow here says, Ty Schmartz Z says, you're absolutely right. Lifting is overrated. Just look at LT, one of the all-time greats. Just raw football talent. You remember, Lawrence didn't really start getting much into the weightlifting until the last year or two of his career.
Yeah, and a guy like LT now would get fined hundreds of thousands of dollars for not showing up for the off-season program. So there you have it.
Okay, we have here Doug, who is at SMD16NWO, says, I don't see enough practice time as an excuse because the winning teams are under the same schedule.
That's what I said, and I just said that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have, let's see here, Lee Estrada says, is there any relationship between how bad a season was and how the next year's schedule is? Well, the only thing I can tell you is that the NFL has this formula. It's a boxed-out formula that you rotate divisions every year, and then there are a few wild card games. You have your in-division opponents.
Right.
Then you have the rotating divisions. Then you have a few wild card games in that schedule, which do correspond to different places where other teams finish in other divisions. So, yes, there's a little bit of a correlation, but not a ton.
So explain, what were the wild card games this year that the Giants had to play?
Oh, that's a good question, Roman.
And I could probably look at the schedule.
Well, here's what I – here. You know what? Here, let me do this for you. Let me pump in the NFL schedule formula for 2015, and I can actually tell you, okay, I can actually tell you – here we go – the schedule rotation for next year. Let's see here. And what we will do is, by looking at this, I can tell you the positions that you'll be looking for – Okay. Let's see here. Schedule formula. Just bear with me just half a second here. Let's see.
We can for right now. So the Giants had to play. You have to play your division. So that's Eagles, Redskins, Cowboys twice apiece. So that's six games. You had to play the NFC West, which is obviously Arizona, Seattle, San Francisco, and who's the fourth team in the NFC West? Rams?
Whoever. What'd you say? Arizona?
Arizona, Seattle, San Francisco. Who's the fourth team in the NFC West? Why did I know that? I'm looking to get the schedule right here.
I'm lost.
And then you have to play AFC South, which is Tennessee, Jacksonville, that they just played
so
the last 2 weeks.
I'm so blacking out right now.
Houston. The wild card games of this year for the Giants was an NFC North team, which was Detroit, and then NFC South team, which was Atlanta. Those teams did not win their division, and I would imagine that they fared equally well as those teams did last year in their respective divisions. So, obviously, if I don't even know who won the – so let's say if Green Bay, for example, won the NFC North, they didn't play Green Bay, they played Detroit. But if a year that you win the division, your wild card games are going to be other divisional opponents. So it's gotten better in terms of the making it equal. And the old schedule is if you end up 4-12, it's almost better because you play a bottom schedule. And that's why there was always a big turnover between the 4-12 team always goes 11-5 the next year. I mean, every year there's two or three teams that go to the playoffs that weren't there the year before. And that's almost by design, I think, now. Because there's only four teams in each division. Again, you play in your division twice, that's six games. You play a whole nother division in the conference. That's four games, that's 10. You play a whole nother division in the AFC, another four games, that's 10. And then two wild card games in the conference. In the conference. So
right.
The wild card games this year being Detroit and Atlanta, who obviously didn't win their divisions last year, just like the Giants did not win.
Oh, you got the pen. I was going to jot something down. That's all right. I'm like, wait a minute.
And I'm like talking with a pen in my
hand. Okay. That's okay.
But I hope, fans, because when the schedule – so that's determined for the next 10 years. But now the NFL, what they'll do is they'll determine the TV schedule. So I remember for years, it was always like, God, why do the Giants have to play the Cowboys opening day for 3-4 years in a row? That always gets better ratings. The Giants being a New York market, Eli Manning, yeah. Guys, Victor Cruz, whoever, popular
sure.
players, they're always going to get a home Monday night game and a road Monday night game, or one or the other, and a Sunday night game. So
in
the Giants, in all likelihood, always going to have three nationally televised games,
at
no matter
minimum.
What.
At
and
minimum.
Even next year, I mean, look, last year they were 7-9, three nationally televised games. This year, obviously they'll be hopefully at the best 7-9. You'll still have three televised games, probably a Dallas game or an Eagles game, Redskins, something. There's always going to be that, and then probably one of the other teams they play. And, TV folks love the quarterback matchups, even though
yeah.
quarterbacks never actually play each other.
I know.
Like a Peyton brothers each other, or a Rodgers,
Manning
Brady,
Bowles,
whatever,
know,
that whole
I know.
Thing. But, again, we don't want to deviate. I'll go back to Giants chat. And,
okay.
Some
John F. says, many of my family are Titans fans. Family moved from New York to Tennessee, many years ago. Sure, it will make my Christmas better if the Giants win. Well, good luck to you, John. We'll see how that works. Somebody in your family will be happy and somebody won't be at the end of the day. That's the bottom line.
Yep.
AJ Marshall wants to know who's going to start in Kiwi's place for the remainder of the season, DeMontre Moore or Kerry Wynn. Well, I think both of them are going to wind up getting more snaps. We were actually trying to talk about that at the beginning of the show, and then we've got a lot of different callers asking about different things. But I think both guys will see significantly more snaps moving forward. Anyway, Chris from New Jersey, you're next on the program. Hello.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Roman.
What's going on?
Hey, I got to just say a couple things about this running game and this offensive line. The one thing I look back on in that 2011 Super Bowl, would never take that back. It was a great run. It was almost like a Band-Aid there at the end of the year. If you remember, during the season, Giants didn't have a pass rush. They didn't run the ball very well. They were at the bottom on both. A lot of those games, people remember, Eli bailed us out, specifically that New England game when Jake Ballard made that great catch over the middle, fourth quarter. So, I kind of almost look at that season and the run they made in the playoffs in the Super Bowl as a Band-Aid. I mean, they got hot. The running game did pick up with Bradshaw and Jacobs in the postseason. The pass rush with Tuck and OC seemed to get rejuvenated. And I look back and say, you know what, it was almost like a Band-Aid, and they caught, I guess, a little bit of lightning in a bottle there at the end. And this running game has not been effective probably since that 2010 season when they rushed for over 100 yards in 13 games. The one rushing game that I always think about, I think it was 2008, the year they had the first round bye and they lost to the Eagles in the second round in the divisional playoff. And you guys remember this, was the game at home when they played the Ravens, and the Ravens hadn't given up a 100-yard rusher in maybe 3 or 4 years. Maybe it was 3 years. And Jacobs and Bradshaw, with that offensive line, rushed for over 200, and I think it was 20 yards, something like that.
Right.
And it takes me back to those days, which opened it up for Eli when they were able to run. And Eli probably wasn't even as good as he is now, as effective without the running game. He'd be so much better with the running game, obviously. But I just have to say the emphasis going into the offseason, the draft, the a free agent veteran, I think we missed that nastiness on the line. I just feel like, I don't want to say they're soft, but I just feel like there's we don't have a road grader. We don't have a cyber. We don't have a Snee no more. We don't have an O'Hara. We don't have that angry guy. Maybe Richburg's that guy. I could see a little bit of that in him, maybe. But we don't have that mean lineman, like a sneer cyber, that's going to get up in somebody's face. And I'm just curious about your thoughts on that.
Well, thank you for the call. Go ahead.
I think, and just from my own just personal experience, that has to be grown organically. And I know sometimes there's a mystique of like a certain type of O-lineman or the Iowa, Wisconsin, you know, tough guy. Or I know when I played out west in San Diego, there's always like the, you know, they always say like a player from like Samoan descent, you know, that plays for Hawaii,
right,
comes in strong, that left guard, that
or
guy.
You hear a lot about the Big 12 guys,
Big
too.
12 guy, yeah. So there's always this mystique of a certain type of offensive lineman. But you talk about those older guys. I mean, those guys were self-starters. Eli Manning had a more seasoned group when he was younger. And there has been some transition. You just had Chris Neen retire. And
there's
Deal retired, so... And I'll go back to my childhood. You know, I grew up in D.C., as you all know, and I was a big fan of the Hogs. And that original group, when you started having one guy here, one guy leaves, two guys retired, I mean, there was some transition there. But, you know, over time, you want to try to go with the best combination. And look, this team has desperately been trying to find the right combination of guys through the draft, whether it was Brewer, Eric Herman, I mean, these organically growing these guys, or a guy that comes from another team. The guy who just left to go to the Raiders, number 77, the guard.
Kevin Booth.
Yeah, Kevin Booth, who was a very reliable guy. I mean, the Super Bowl season, played inside about three different positions over about 10 games that he started. I mean, you can't just find those guys off the street. So somewhere between a high draft pick, a guy you get from another team, you had David Boss, you try to get him from a couple years to replace O'Hara because he was a veteran, or guys that, you know, who you know that they're one, two-year fill-in guys. I mean, somewhere through that whole formula, you try to find the right combination. And it is not an exact science, Paul.
Oh, no.
It's not an exact science.
I tell people this all the time. After the 1999 season, the Giants rebuilt.
That's when I left.
Rebuilt their offensive line with three free agents. Lomas Brown wound up swapping places with you.
Yeah, Dusty Ziegler.
Dusty Ziegler and Glenn Parker.
Yep.
Came into the Giants prior to the 2000 season, and the Giants went to the Super Bowl that year. So they replaced three of their offensive linemen with veteran free agents, and they won. You know, they didn't get the ring, but they played the Ravens in the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah.
And then the following year, the team went down a little bit, and that offensive line did not play nearly as well as they had during that Super Bowl season.
And that was a transition. Then it was Luke Pettigo going to – you know, at right tackle. I think Whittle started for a while. You had Bober.
Yeah, sure.
I think, emerged. And Luke Pettigo went from right to left. And then you had, I think Deal eventually was at right tackle. And I was gone then, so I don't
I
know
mean,
the com-
a
so
lot of
you
guys.
Started seeing different combinations. And again, I have to understand this as a professional, that it's nothing against you. This is where the team decides to go. Because me, Ron Stone, Scott Gregg, I mean, we all played, you know, 8 more years on other teams after we left here and started. Yeah. I mean, Stone and Greg, that right side, they started together at 49ers for about 5-6 years together.
Sure.
And I, you know, obviously, you know, I left here, started, won a Super Bowl, started 150 games. So, look, what I've loved to be me, Greg Bishop, and Brian Williams, and Stone and Greg for 10 years. You know, if this is the old days prior to salary cap, I mean, you just sign a lifetime deal and then no one leaves anywhere. But, you know, through the dynamics of free agency and how teams have to manage rosters, there's always going to be some transition. You just hope, at the very least, there's always at least, I think, 3 guys that should be mainstays for, you know, 4 or 5, hopefully 6 years. And then sometimes you get a guy or two that kind of swings in there. Injuries happen. Guys,
sounds like a good number.
Guys
3
play,
out of 5.
Yeah, guys play poorly. Guys leave the free agency. A guy gets injured or whatever. Or guys retire, like Snead and Deal.
Well, back to the phone calls. Robert from Tampa, you're next on the show. Hello. Okay, Robert's not there, so we will just continue. We'll go back to actually our promo. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter Code Blue to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Paul Dottino and Roman Oben with you. Our number is 201-939-4513. Phone lines are open right now. Or you can, of course, get us at hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Roman, we did get some reports from the newspaper fellows who were out of practice today while we were doing the show. Tom Rock of Newsday, fine Giants beat reporter, says that Jenkins, DRC, Pugh, and McLean were practicing at various levels of participation. He also says Jaquan Williams not at practice. Neither was Brewer, Herzlick, or Jennings. Jaquan Williams is the one surprise of all the guys I just rattled off because he was at practice yesterday, albeit on a limited basis, now not working today.
Right.
Again, I don't know if that's more concussion-related or shoulder-related because those are the two things they've listed on the injury report for him. But, you know, that's certainly a shame because, again, this is one of those guys. He's still on the young side of his career, developing, having a career season, by the way. Jaquan Williams has had his best season as a Giant. You hate to see him lose time.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because we've seen Jaquan Williams go from a rookie with a lot of promise who Carl Banks and Jesse Armstead said both that he would be the guy in you know 2 to 3 years' time. And we saw him as a rookie shadow Michael Vick when he was still you know in his peak of his career in Philadelphia when he came back. And then now you've seen him get to this point and then have an injury. So, again, these are things that you just can't predict. But you hope that Jaquan Williams can come back and hopefully it's 4 games. But if it's at least 3 games or whatever it is and just finish strong and just feel good about his development. Because I think a lot of people in this building feel good about, including yourself, obviously, where Jaquan Williams was at this point of the season.
He's missed the past 3 games, and yet through the 9 games he's played, a career high 75 tackles.
Yeah,
you know, it has been a good year for Jaquan Williams, and so certainly wishing him all the best, and hopefully for his sake he'll be able to get back on the practice field soon and still have some more games to play this season. Let's go back to the phone calls. Is it Robert from Tampa? You're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Hi.
Hey, I have a comment and a question.
Sure.
Okay, Paul, I just want to let you know how right you was in the beginning before the draft about getting that offensive lineman, but I don't regret ODB. I don't regret Beckham.
He's a heck of a player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because Zach Martin couldn't be catching touchdowns with one hand right now.
Right.
Three fingers.
I wanted to know about Corey Washington. What are they going to do, because y'all closer to the Giants than we are, what are they going to do with Reuben Randle next year? Because I feel Corey Washington, I think he's a star in the making also, but they're not giving him no type of playing time.
Well, Roman, let me take this first.
Yeah.
And I want you to address Reuben Randle and his development. I'm just going to tell you that Corey Washington, Coach Coughlin's philosophy is that as a young player, now, of course, if there are injuries and you have to thrust them into the lineup on Sunday, that's one thing entirely. But Coach Coughlin's philosophy has always been you have to earn your snaps at practice during the week
right.
before you get to play in the games on Sundays,
right.
even if you dress. And so Corey Washington, to this point, it's quite clear to me that he has not earned enough of snaps to get into the regular rotation on game day based on his performance at practice during the week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just as simple as it goes. There's really nothing else to be said right there. And even though he had a great preseason, and that's all well and good, and no one denies that. In fact, that's why he's on the team.
Yeah.
That's why he's on the 53. He earned a spot on the 53. Now he's got to go out and earn spots during the week to get into the games on Sunday. It's kind of like a two-pronged process. So that's the answer to that part of it. Thoughts about Reuben Randle, who, by the way, I might also add, he has a career high in catches this year.
Yeah, and you have to say when Victor Cruz got injured, you know, you talked about it was a prediction of the number of catches he would have gotten and how those balls still have to be thrown, and that's been distributed. Reuben Randle's gotten a majority of those catches. Obviously,
Beckham
too, the last few weeks, Donnell. But again, I mean, Reuben Randle, since he came in 2012, as a rookie, 19 catches. Second year, he doubled that in 2013. Last season, 41 catches. Well, you saw that all that offseason time in terms of Victor Cruz's contract. I mean, we're going back to last year, 2013 offseason. And then he did make a jump, 14 yards on average. And this year, he's got 56 catches, only averaging 9.5. But and he had a great game against San Francisco. I mean, that was really his breakout game. No touchdowns, but he had 7 for 112. Now,
yeah.
Stats are what they are, but Reuben Randle is an ascending player, and I think he is continuing to get more mature. And I think sometimes, you know, he's gotten, you know, unfair criticism because he's not a Pro Bowler right away, second year or third year. He's not immediately a compliment to Victor Cruz. I mean, Hakeem Nicks just left last year, so he had every opportunity last year to succeed. He's gone. So I think Reuben Randle is improving. His catches are improving. And I don't know from a coaching standpoint what he's done, you know, in terms of mentally, you know, where he is in the classroom, in the meeting rooms, his film study, you know, doing all the things off the field. You know, I try to ask Eli Manning whenever I get a chance to talk to him about how are those Friday film sessions
right.
when you guys meet as a group, quarterback, receivers, tight ends, backs. So, you know, it's a process. And again, it's not an exact science. I've said that about almost about three or four other things today's show. But, again,
it's
going back to Corey Washington, I mean, you'd like to see Corey Washington, look, from a Division II school to what he did to make the team this year, that's tremendous. And I think if as an individual, if I'm Corey Washington, I'm saying, okay, I want to have hopefully get some more catches this year, but I want to be a better contributor going forward. I want to do something this season to prove, you know, 3-4 catches. He got his first touchdown this year. I mean, it's all about playing team football, doing what's required. And I look at these positions because I wasn't a skilled player. I mean, left tackle is debatable
right.
if that's a skilled player or not. But I think it always comes down to what are you and who are you when you don't have a ball in your hand? Special teams, blocking downfield, again, the intangibles, meeting room, film study. That goes for running backs, tight ends. You know, running backs, we always talk about that running back position, Paul, in terms of blocking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's determined certain guys that have made the team have not. So.
And remember, what Roman's talking about when he says film study and film room, the Giants do quiz their players.
Yeah, every week. Everyone gets a quiz.
I understand that. I don't know if people totally get that, Roman. They get quizzed every week, and that's what we talk about when we say the guy has to earn it during practice during the week. It's not just on the field. It's on those quizzes.
Right. And then Reuben Randle, as we know last week, he was benched for, I think, the first quarter or so because of missing a meeting or being late for treatment. I think that came out publicly on Twitter, I believe. So, again, you know, sometimes those are the things, and I don't think Corey Washington's missed any meetings, or I don't think he has, but you've got to be a total football player. And I think that's why you have Eli Mannings and Victor Cruz's and guys that are great football players. They're ambassadors off the field. They represent the league well because they can manage everything. It's not about just throwing one guy the ball and getting him more catches. It's about the totality of your career, the football part off the field, being a good steward in the community. I mean, that's what really makes you a professional. And I hope Reuben Randle, being a second-round pick now in his third year, you know, he continues to improve. And not only do more things like he did against the 49ers, but really show that he could really be in the mix next year, because I think Odell Beckham's kind of jumped him in terms of a guy who was like his big brother in college. Now he's like Odell Beckham's like the big brother, because now next year you hope, you know, probably going to see a 1-2 combination. You'd love to see Cruz, Randall, and Beckham, you know, really take this thing into the future.
They were hoping to see that this year.
Yeah, yeah, and I was too. But I mean, you go back to Ben McAdoo. I mean, look at the formula that worked in Green Bay. Jari Nelson, Jennings, Cobb. There was always three guys, you know, two or three guys that you never knew who was going to have the 100-yard game. And that's when, you know, that when the system is working, the system is succeeding, everybody becomes successful.
And let's not kid ourselves. When the Giants won their last Super Bowl and they had Nix, Manningham, and Cruz, it was because they had those three guys. Remember Belichick in the NFL Films clips is on the sidelines at the end of that game saying, you know, don't let Cruz get it. Don't let Cruz get it. We're going to watch out for Nix and Cruz. Manningham, let him throw it to Manningham. Yeah, well,
Make
we'll see how that worked
yeah.
out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you really want to be able to have that third weapon, because they can't deal with all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, make them pick the one guy who they want to try to beat them, and maybe that guy actually will. And yeah. Mario Manningham did that. And in fact, it's funny I even say that, because Manningham was here in training camp. His knee wasn't quite right. He was unable to make the team. And, in fact, he hasn't gone anywhere, to my knowledge.
No.
Manningham never signed with anybody this year.
No,
so that knee really isn't up to speed. And what a shame, because, honestly, when Beckham lost all that time early in the year, and then, of course, Cruz went down with the injury in Philadelphia, the Giants really could have used a healthy Mario Manningham.
Yeah, and let me bring up another point. You know, last year, Detroit game, 4th and 8. I mean, a critical – they don't win that game if Reuben Randall – I mean, if Gerald Jernigan doesn't catch that ball on 4th and 8.
Right.
I analyzed the play on the website, broke the play down. And, I mean, I would love to see a Corey Washington come through like that. I mean, when you've been sitting – and it was Detroit, so it wasn't a cold sideline in December, but –
It was in a dome.
Yeah, in the dome. But if
– I remember because it was warm.
Yeah. And – I would love to see, just for his confidence in his career, a guy like Corey Washington. It's week 15. It's cold. He's standing on the sidelines for 3.5 quarters, and he catches that critical third down catch that kicks him a field goal, because that helps his confidence, and that gives him a different level of focus going into 2015.
You know,
and every young player, Paul, needs that type of experience.
What I think what you'd want to see in terms of development and in terms of what happens with Corey Washington from here, I'd like to say – it would be great if he could follow the same pattern that Dominic Hickson followed when he was released by the Broncos. He was a special teams player who barely played wide receiver. He got to the Giants, was a special teams player here, worked his behind off, and I think it was only after like the third year he was here that they actually started to work him into the wide receiver mix. And even though he wasn't catching a ton of passes, he was making key plays in key spots. And before you knew it, it was like, okay, guess what? This guy deserves to get the ball some.
Yeah.
And then there were some injuries, and he had to get the ball some more. And then, of course, all of the knee injuries he wound up having really derailed what could have been a much more promising career. But Dominic Hickson's a great example of that kind of player, Roman, who, you know, you want to see him inch forward in his development. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, hey, guess what? He really is a part of what we do.
Yeah, and then you turn around, he's been playing 8-9 years in the NFL, just being a guy that was reliable, dependable, did everything. And I think with Corey Washington, just when you look at him physically, I think he still physically needs to really mature into an NFL body receiver.
Well,
I think
he's still a rookie.
Yeah, he's still a rookie. He's a lanky guy. He's not one of these shorter receivers. We talked about those slot guys being better route runners. I mean, he's got to have room and space to take off and jump and use his body, use his size. But as you mature as a receiver, and again, I mentioned I talked to Amani Toomer about – I asked Amani Toomer receiver questions. He asked me a lineman question. He said, as you mature into your body, you learn how to use what you do well, and then you work on the little things each year. And you hope – again, just for his development, I hope that Corey Washington continues to become like Dominic Hickson. And then for Reuben Randall, he continues to become a reliable, dependable guy in that second, third receiver conversation for the future of the Giants.
We have Ben Gruen who says, Corey Washington is a raw player with terrific ball skills. He doesn't know how to play wide receiver in the NFL yet. More to it than just the fade route.
Yeah, and that's as honest of a comment And again, and a lot of fans that called in because of what he did in preseason. I mean, you had five preseason games to see Corey Washington catch five touchdowns. I mean, game winners, a lot of them.
All of the different variety, too.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that was great for his confidence, but.
Against fourth stringers, though.
Yeah, but. He earned his right to make the team.
And that's the thing. You can earn your right to make the team on the practice squad. You can earn your right to make the team on the 53, but then you got to earn your right to play.
Yeah. You're right.
Three levels.
And that's why I said there's always something to prove. You're always playing for something. You're always playing for your job. You're always getting better as a football player. I mean, Paul, my 12th in the league at 35 years old, I was getting better every week. Yeah. Learning, film, all those things.
All right. Just mentioned Dwayne Kennedy has one other comment I wanted to say. If not for injury, our wideouts could have been Nix, Manningham, and Steve Smith. Forget about Steve Smith. Great career that just totally wound up getting sidetracked by that knee injury. All right. That'll do it for today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Again, we are here Monday to Friday, every weekday from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 is the phone number, or always get us on Twitter at #GiantsChat. Tomorrow it'll be Jeff Fiegels, I believe, along with, is it John or is it Lance? It is Lance. Lance Meadow and Jeff Fiegels will have your show for you tomorrow. He's Roman Oben. I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you next time.
Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
One hit, no punch. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.